I've spent the first half of the first hour talking about UFC 249, and I want to continue to do so right now. We are joined by a friend of the program. He covers boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports. He was the first sports writer to be honored as outstanding journalist by the Nevada Press Association. He is Kevin Ioli. Kevin, it's great to have you back. Kevin, before we get into some of the individual fights, what did you make of UFC 249 as an experience overall?
I thought it was an awesome show. I mean, I think the fighters really showed up showed off their talents on Saturday. I mean, nearly from the beginning of the card, every single fight, with maybe one exception, was really a good event. And these guys really brought it. It was a fun show, and of course, it was capped by the final three fights were just spectacular. When you consider the significance of them and the talent level of the fighters involved and the news that was created out of it, I thought all just really came out on a very, very high note.
Kevin Ioli is joining us. Kevin, I want to ask you about the three fights, but really quickly, what was your setup for the night like, both in terms of how you watched the fights and how you were interviewing fighters afterwards?
Yeah, I stayed at home. I had said, and I think I told you, I was going to go to Tachi Palace if it was in California when they were doing it, because I felt like it was a rogue event, right? So that, they were against the state government, they were against the senator from California, and so I felt like I had to be there. But my age, I felt like, when they were in Florida, it was no longer a rogue event. The governor welcomed them, the mayor of Jacksonville welcomed them. I felt like it was too risky for me to fly 5 hours in a plane and hang around down in Jacksonville. So I watched it at home, and what the UFC did that was great, they had set a WebEx, Cisco WebEx system set up so you could talk to the fighters after all the fights, and it was terrific. So I sat in my home office. I watched the fights on ESPN pay-per-view and ESPN itself. And then when each fight was over, the fighters I needed to talk to, you just joined into the WebEx. And they had a neat little thing where you would hit a virtual hand and would raise your hand. They would call on you. You could talk to the fighters. And it was perfect. I mean, it was really a good situation. And I felt like it was as close to being there as you could possibly get.
I like it. Kevin Ioli is joining us. All right. So in terms of the three big fights, Francis Ngannou had another amazing knockout. You posed this question on Twitter. So how would you answer it? Quote, is he the scariest guy in combat sports right now?
I think it's a big yes, because he has the power, but he also has the aggression that, say, an Anthony Joshua lacks, right? I mean, he has everything. And I really look at him and I say, is there anybody in this sport that would really want to fight him? You know, when he fought Stipe Miocic, he wasn't really ready for the title in 2018. I think he's clearly ready now, and he's a physical beast. I don't know if you happen to catch that video of him and Shaq, when Shaq was there, and he lifted Shaq up.
Right.
I mean, it was just, what does Shaq weigh, 330 pounds? I mean, it was just incredible, and he just launched him into the air. And Francis can hit so freaking hard. I think he is the scariest in combat sports, and I don't see anybody stopping him. I think, the only person that stops Francis at this point is Francis. If whoever he fights, whether it be DC or Stipe, the winner of that fight, I think we're going to be looking at a long road for either one of those two guys to get a win over Francis.
Kevin Ioli is joining us. All right, then you had Henry Cejudo against Dominic Cruz, which was a really intriguing matchup. You can make an argument that Cruz might have been the best ever in the class, but he had not fought since 2016. Cejudo, Kevin, was working on Cruz's leg in the first round. He seemed to be finding himself and have some success in the second round, but then he went for that uppercut that missed, and Cejudo brings him down with a knee and starts landing lefts. What was your reaction to the referee's stoppage?
My instant reaction as I saw it is that may be a little quick, because, I thought Dominic kind of turned away and then was starting to get up, and I thought it could have been a little quick. But as I watched the replay, which, of course, the referee doesn't have the ability to do, Henry landed some really good shots, and that knee was a really crunching knee right on the butt of the chin. And, I always argue stop them one punch or, one kick, whatever, too early rather than too late. And I felt like the referee did a good job. Cruz's comments afterwards, I understand he's a competitor. It's been, 3.5 years since he fought, and then, he gets stopped where he feels like he's still capable of going on. But the referee has to make that split-second judgment. And when you saw that Cejudo was landing those left hands in there, and they were landing, not every single one landed, but a lot of them did, and combined with that, that really strong knee to the chin, I felt like it was a justified stop.
All right, so Cejudo, that was a fantastic performance. He is one of the best in the sport, pound for pound. Yet afterwards, stunningly, I guess. He announces his retirement. Are you buying it, or do you think that we're going to see a comeback from him, and even sooner than later?
I am buying the retirement. I mean, just, you know, I mean, he had never said to me, hey, I'm thinking about this, but just in talking to him, you know, you knew that he was kind of getting tired of the grind. And I think what happened was after the shoulder surgery he had last year, I think that's when he really started thinking, hey, you know, do I really want to go through this anymore? Because, you know from talking to athletes over the years, Jim, how difficult it is for them to recover from these injuries, you know, and it's a mental challenge as well as a physical one. And, you know, he had a pretty major shoulder surgery after his win over Marlon Moraes. I think, you know, I do buy it. He wants to have a family, wants to go into real estate. I believe he's done. He made a ton of money. He did a great job. You know, followed up that gold medal and won two UFC championships, and he's the only fighter to defend them. I mean, he went out there and defended both of them. So, you know, you see these guys win them, but they can't defend both of them. He defended both of them.
Kevin Ioli is my guest. Great fighter. He's had a great career, if in fact that's it. Now, going into the fight, you had made the point, Kevin, that Tony Ferguson had put together a truly special career and that a 12-fight winning streak is something that is so hard to accomplish in MMA. Knowing that, what's it say about Justin Gaethje that he just dominated, flat out dominated the fight the way he did?
That was mind-blowing the way the fight went. I mean, you know, did I think Gaethje would land shots? Yes. Did I think he would hurt Ferguson? Yes. But there was a couple things. Number one, there was no jabs thrown in the fight. Every single strike was a power strike, and there was no takedown attempt. So it was all just big shots. And Gaethje landed 72% of his punches and kicks. I mean, it was just incredible what he did. And, you know, what I thought, and this isn't to take away from Gaethje, but I thought that it showed Tony Ferguson had overtrained. You know, he said that he had gone into training camp in November when the fight with Khabib was first made, and he basically stayed in the entire time. And I think, you know, he just had left his best fight in the gym, and Justin Gaethje fought a brilliant fight, did everything he had to do to win it, and I was so impressed with Justin. I can't even begin to tell you, Jim.
I agree. It was one of the most amazing things I've seen, Kevin, in the sport. Gaethje has always been aggressive to the point of being reckless in the past, but right. How much more dangerous, Kevin, is he now that he's that technical?
Yeah, I think, you know what?
Tactical,
you know,
I should say.
He is a huge problem at this point because the fact is before he would run into shots that would get him in trouble. And he's not doing that now. You saw, like, I thought a really big turning point in his career came in that third round where he landed a combination and Ferguson wobbled back to the cage. And I think 95% of all the UFC fighters would have been on him because, you know, Ferguson was hurt. But he knows Ferguson has this great chin, and he wanted to be sure Ferguson wasn't playing possum. So instead of following him in and maybe having Ferguson fire an elbow, which he's been known for, coming up with a knee, you know, he kind of stayed back and just sort of surveyed the situation and kind of tried to get a, you know, what was going on. And he didn't make the mistake that he made when he fought Eddie Alvarez or that he made when he fought Dustin Poirier. And that makes him a much better and much tougher opponent for anybody because this is a guy that was an All-American wrestler who never uses wrestling. So you put him in there now, if he fights Khabib, let's say, in the next fight, which is what it looks like is going to happen, you know, boy, oh boy, has that changed the complexion of things. You know, I still would say you have to favor Khabib in the fight, but my Lord, Justin's performance against Tony Ferguson just really mixes it up.
Kevin, it's so great. I can't wait for that fight, if in fact that is the next fight. And to your point, Gaethje is such a great wrestler. Never forget, he won a couple of state titles in high school. He was an All-American in college.
Right.
He never even wrestles. Like, he's had one takedown for his career. He never even wrestles. So what about the potential matchup with Khabib? Khabib is unbeaten. Khabib's only lost one round his entire career. He seems unbeatable. What happens if the two of them get into the cage together? Can Gaethje keep that in a stand-up situation? And what happens if they stand together and they strike?
You know, I mean, Khabib is a good striker, but I don't think he's at Gaethje's level as a striker, right? So I think that, you know, for Khabib to be able to be successful in the fight, he has got to, you know, offer the threat of the takedown, which obviously he has it there, but he's really got to use that and set up his takedowns well. The one takedown that the one strike, Jim, that he uses is where he fakes a takedown and he knocked Conor McGregor down with his, you know, he kind of leans forward and looks like he's going to go for the outside leg, and then he throws his windmill right hand over the top and he hits guys. And that, because everybody's so conditioned on him to, you know, defend against the shot, when they see him move that way, they think that he's going for the takedown, and he lands that right hand. So you know, I feel like that's going to be a big thing. So if Justin Gaethje watches and he's aware of that in training camp, sees the film and prepares for that, you know, that's going to be something that, you know, he has shown he has the ability to make those adjustments. He made adjustments against Ferguson in the fight, and he clearly learned from watching film of Ferguson. I think that, you know, is going to give him a better chance. I still have to favor Khabib in the fight. I mean, remember, Khabib has just been so dominant over everybody, but I think we have a lot more competitive fight than we ever would have thought we would have had on our hands when you match those two up.
Kevin Ioli joins me for another moment or so. So, Kevin, what about this notion of a Ferguson-Conor McGregor fight on the horizon? Is that a possibility, or do you think, knowing the UFC the way you do, that they might go in a different direction because Ferguson's going to need some time to recover, and sometimes they do not like the idea of having a guy who lost facing a guy who won?
Yeah, they rarely match. You know, they'll do it in a main event if they have to, but they rarely match somebody who's coming off a loss with somebody who's coming off a win. So obviously, Conor having knocked out Donald Cerrone is coming off a victory. But I think that fight makes sense. Now, Tony, as I reported yesterday on Twitter and today in my follow-up story, Tony suffered a broken orbital, so that's going to, you know, make a question of how long is he going to be out. But I think that's the fight to make if you can make it. If Tony can get back in any period of time, I think that is the fight to make, because that would be a bonkers fight, Conor versus Tony. I mean, I think it would be similar to what we just saw Saturday night, and maybe even a better fight from this standpoint, Jim. You know, the one thing you mentioned, Justin Gaethje, he's a former state champion wrestler and an All-American wrestler. He had at least the threat of wrestling. I think when you fight Conor, you don't worry about the threat of wrestling. You worry about the striking. And so Tony will know going into that fight, that is a striker's fight. I think that would be a really, really good one. And then that sets another fight up, you know, for the winner of Khabib and Justin. I think it's a great division at this point. And Dustin Poirier and Dan Hooker is also in that mix. And we have a lot of really good fights ahead of us at 155.
A ton of good fights ahead. He covers boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports. I want to reiterate, the first sports writer to be honored as Outstanding Journalist by the Nevada Press Association. And he is a good friend of the program. Kevin, great job as always. Thank you so much. And always good to talk to you.
Good talking to you, Jim. Appreciate it. See you.
Have a great day. Kevin Ioli, breaking it all down.